Good evening. It's John Loftus. Welcome back to the Loftus Report. You're listening to us on WSNR-AM 620 in New York City and WKAT-AM 1360 in Miami, broadcasting up through Fort Lauderdale, the Palm Beaches, and, of course, all around the world on the Internet. And tonight's guest is an interesting young man named Arend Lamertink, and we're going to be talking about an unusual corner of history, a series of a network of banks between what became Nazi Germany, the Netherlands, and New York City. And it's kind of interesting because the New York Bank was run by the Bush family. Yeah, that Bush family. And the Netherlands, I think, played a key role in laundering money into Nazi Germany, and then after the war, laundering it out. Now, I know this may sound a bit bizarre, but blame it on Teddy Roosevelt, my favorite Republican. When Teddy Roosevelt was president, he passed a whole series of laws to crack down on the monopolists, the corrupt businessmen that were making money hand over fist, mostly through extortion type methods. Their nickname was the Robber Baron. And among the robber barons were people like the Rockefeller family, the Rockefeller family. These guys believed that cartels and monopolies and extortion were their God-given right. Roosevelt wanted to shut them down, and he did. He passed a whole series of anti-cartel, anti-monopolist acts that made these type of predatory practices illegal in America. And what happened is that the robber barons of Wall Street moved their money overseas. You see, in their one last great act of defiance against democracy, the robber barons bribed, and I say bribed, Congress into passing a loophole law called the Webb-Pomeroy Act of 1918. And that act allowed for U.S. companies to operate overseas, to have monopolies and cartels and trusts overseas, as long as they didn't do it in America. So basically, it exported the robber barons of Wall Street and sent them overseas. Now, what did they do as soon as this law was passed? In 1918, a bank was formed, the August Thyssen Bank in Berlin, the bank for Handel und Schifffahrt in the Netherlands, and the Union Banking Corporation in New York City. Now, what these three banks did was to set up an international cartel. Money would move out of Wall Street to buy the stock of German banks. Well, so what? So they bought banks. Big deal. Well, in Germany, though, it was legal for German banks to own controlling stock in corporations. So if you owned the bank stock, you secretly owned the corporation. Now, why, in God's name, after World War I, would anyone want to invest in Germany? Their currency was in the trash. It was, you could have a wheelbarrow full of monsters to buy a loaf of bread. After World War I, Germany was in free fall. So who would invest in Germany? Well, the Dulles brothers. I mean, their clients were the robber barons. And the Dulles brothers said, move your money into Germany now. Which is interesting, because at the end of World War I, the Versailles Treaty, it was the Dulles brothers who set up very onerous terms that would crush the German economy. And there are some historians who actually think that the Dulles brothers deliberately rigged the Versailles negotiations to force Germany into economic collapse precisely to make it cheaper for their business partners to buy up German companies. And again, why would anyone in the West want to invest in German companies? This is a simple reason. Patents. Back in those days after World War I, German corporations had an almost high-tech monopoly in the world patent market. German science was the best in the world. And if you wanted to study physics or chemistry, you went to Germany. And for, you know, half a century later, people are still learning German because that is the great language of science. And these scientific processes were necessary for a whole host of industries. And the bottom line was the Dulles brothers forced through the Versailles Treaty for Germany to go bankrupt so that their predator partners, the robber barons, could swoop in and buy up German corporations for a song. So the stock was almost worthless, but the patents were priceless. Now, the whole scam was supposed to coalesce in 1939 when the Dusseldorf Patent Conference was supposed to take place. The Dulles brothers' clients, the Rockefellers, the Harrimans, the DuPonts, the Fords, were all going to share with their German partners in a worldwide cartel, a patent cartel, so that only those who were part of the group would get access to these modern patents, and the rest would be starved of technology. So it was a technological cartel. And it probably would have worked. A handful of American and German companies would have conquered the world in 1939, except for Hitler. Now, Hitler, the irony is, when these guys set their banks in 1918, one of the earliest things they did was to fund the infant Nazi party. Yeah, that's right. The Dulles brothers, the Bush family, they were part of the money laundering system whereby American businessmen bought into the early Nazi party. In fact, they built the Thyssen part, the German part of the network, had their Dutch bank loan the money to the Nazis to build the first Nazi party headquarters, the famous Brown House. These Thyssen-owned fronts in Holland later built the famous battleship, the Bismarck, and their international steel cartel produced most of the steel that was used in the bombs and weapons of World War II. So no one knew, of course, that the investment money was coming out of America. Some experts tell me that nearly 70% of the money that went to rebuild the Third Reich came from the United States, from the robber barons of Wall Street. Now, Hitler was supposed to be just a dog on a chain. The Harrimans, which were a great Democratic family, and the Bushes and the Walkers, which are great Republican families, really didn't much like the idea of the Nazi Party, but they wanted Hitler to be a dog in the chain to keep the Communist Party at bay and keep the labor unions down and keep prices down. But Hitler broke the chain. He turned on his Western investors. And one of the first things that Hitler did after coming to power in 1933 was to pass a law forbidding foreign ownership of German banks and corporations. Well, guess who that was aimed at? The Bushes, the Dulleses, the Rockefellers, etc. But they were one step ahead of them, because immediately the American investors asked the Swiss government to pass the Swiss Bank Secrecy Act of 1933. So the Americans then shifted their ownership to Swiss banks, which owned secretly the stock of German banks, which owned the German corporations, and the whole mad scheme went on. It was enormously profitable. But at the very end, Thyssen became nervous. In 1939, he wrote a book called I Funded Hitler. Didn't mention a lot about his American investors, but said, this guy is a danger to Germany. And indeed, he was right. You know, Thyssen at the last minute realized that Hitler was a madman, and he was dragging Germany into a war which he could never win. And Thyssen was put under VIP house arrest, but his properties were so valuable to the German war effort that a friendly banker sort of administered them for him during World War II. Now, here's where it gets nasty, folks. The Thyssen group had cut a deal with the Russians early on to build a super, sort of a, the Walmarts of industrial processing, if you will. They would bring German patent technology, and the Russians would bring in their raw material, and they'd build this real high-tech plant. And so they had to build canals from the Russian side to bring the material in. And the plant had to be situated close to the Russian border because the Russian rail system used different size rails and different track tires than the European system. So whatever site was picked had to be on the, someplace like the Vistula River, where canals could connect with the German ore shipments, and it could be near enough to the European rail lines, it had access to the supply of water, and most importantly, an access to the coal fields. So they looked in the province of Silesia in Poland, which met all the criteria. Now, as it happens, the Silesian Coal Company was owned by the American investors. In fact, Prescott Bush, the grandfather of the current president, was the executive director of the company. He ran the Silesian American Coal Company. And the coal that they mined was sold to the new superplant. You've all heard of the name of the superplant. You just didn't realize its place in history. The plant was called Auschwitz, named after the nearby village of Auschwitz. The Auschwitz plant was originally designed as a joint deal between Hitler and Stalin. After the Nazis attacked Stalin, Auschwitz, of course, became famous in history as a slave labor camp where gas chambers were used to exterminate a large part of the Christian, Jewish, and Gypsy population of Europe. It is not known how many died in these camps. The estimate is some 6 million Jews and 5 million non-Jews. New Russian information leads us to believe that we may have undercounted the Holocaust, that many more may have died. So, Prescott Bush's company manufactured the coal, mined the coal in Silesia that was trucked to Auschwitz. The coal was then processed into all sorts of new chemicals and gasoline additives necessary for aviation fuel the whole thing. So Auschwitz was a joint effort secretly funded by American businessmen, and it employed Jewish slave labor. Now, after the war, the whole Auschwitz connection was erased because the trustee that was running the companies for the Bush family, we don't know what he did with the profits. It's possible that the Bush family never got a dime from Auschwitz. It's possible that that was the source of their millions. We do know that the front company in New York, the Union Banking Corporation, that was headed by Prescott Bush, was seized by the U.S. government and Nazi front during World War II, and that the Union Banking Corporation was known to be connected to a Dutch bank. And after the Nazis overran Holland, it was believed that this Dutch bank was now in Nazi control, and therefore the Union Bank in New York had to be assumed to be a Nazi bank. It was actually worse than that. These three banks, Union Bank in New York, Bank von Schiephoff and Heinemann in the Netherlands, and the August Thyssen Bank in Berlin, it was a shell game. They figured no matter who won World War II, who won the next war, they would shift the ownership papers around the banks to say that the banks were owned by a neutral company. And as it turns out, the Dutch were neutral during World War II. In World War II, all these guys said, well, you know, oh, look, you know, all these companies in Germany were actually owned by the Dutch Dutch branch of the Thyssen family, and we were neutral, so give us some money back. And by and large, the gullible allies did. Of course, it also helped that Alan Dulles was in charge of intelligence investigations in post-war Germany. Now, after the war, the Bush family finally got their shares back and sold them. I am told that each share was worth something like $750,000, and Prescott Bush and his father-in-law, Herbert Walker, each owned a share. That's about $1.5 million in 1951 dollars, which would be about $30 million in today's currency. So the Bush family fortune seems to have come from their secret ownership of Nazi stocks. And of course, the Bush family was just nickel and dime players. They were the managers. The real heavy money came from people like the Rockefellers and the Harrimans. In fact, I saw some paperwork where many years after the war, the Rockefeller family still owned some 33%, 32% of the Chase Manhattan Bank owned the Thyssen Krupp Corporation. that they were the secret owners of what became the largest and wealthiest conglomerate in Europe. ThyssenKrupp to this day makes a lot of elevators in America, makes a lot of steel, and they make a lot of money. But, you know, that's the bottom line, is that the World War II is over, but the Nazis won because the Nazi corporations, and let me, Thyssen and Krupp both were tried as war criminals. But because of their influence, they were quickly pardoned and allowed to go back to work. No one can deny that they were war criminals. They were closely associated with Hitler. No one can deny that the Bush family and the Harriman family, both Republicans and Democrats, were intricately involved with financing the early Nazi party, and they continue to make a profit on both sides of the war. Now tonight, that's a long prelude to saying our guest is Aaron Lammertink, and Aaron is from the Netherlands, and there's been a lot of new developments in this story, and so I asked Aaron to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning his time to give us an update on it. Aaron, how are you doing?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Tell us what you found out about this television show that was in Netherlands about this.
Well, at some point there was a television show when President Bush visited the Netherlands a few years ago, and there it was told about the connection with the Rotterdam Bank and the Nazi Germany. And at some point I got more and more interested and started digging, and I found an article by Tom Biesemaat, who is also wrote a book about Prince Bernhard called Bernhard Gate. And he told there was an article in the NRC, which is a leading Dutch newspaper, about so-called Operation Juliana. Juliana was the wife of Prince Bernhard, so the later queen of the Netherlands. And this operation handled about
how the
paperwork was gotten back from the eastern sector in Berlin, from the Augustinian Bank there to Rotterdam. So I was interested in that particular article, and a friend of mine had access to a database with all kinds of old newspaper articles, and he got a digital copy for me, and I looked it up and read the article, which was very interesting.
Now, I read in some of the files that I have seen that Prince Bernhard was the secret agent for the Nazis in the Netherlands, and that he organized a team of Dutch intelligence to go into East Berlin under the pretext of retrieving Princess Juliana's crown jewels.
The NRC article talks about shares. I think a word about 3 million guilders at the time. I have to look it up in the article if you want to know the exact number. But quite a lot of Dutch-owned shares, which were before the war stored at the Nederlandse Handelsmaatschappij, and which were moved into the Rotterdam bank by the German occupation powers during the war, and then at some point moved to East Berlin. There were shares by the Royal Dutch family amongst those, and they wanted to get those back, so they started investigating.
Well, you know, my sense is that this is an important part of history. No one knows that Prince Bernhard sold his own country. He was helping the Nazis hide their money after World War II. He sends a team of Dutch intelligence officers. And one of my sources worked for Dutch intelligence, so I'll be candid with you. And these guys went in to what became East Berlin, that was under the communist Russian domination at the time, and dug up this bombed-out bank, the August Thyssen Bank. The pretext was to rescue the crown jewels of Princess Juliana, but the real idea was to get a hold of the paperwork.
Yeah.
And by moving the bank ownership paperwork to the Netherlands, that enabled the Netherlands banks to claim that they owned this property in Germany, the Nazis stole it from them. Is that consistent with what you hear?
Yeah, well, just a part of the crown jewels is not consistent. This article, which is, by the way, also written by Kees Wiebes, which is a professor or somewhere. I don't know exactly, but he also has a very respectable archive. So this man has a lot of information. So the crown jewels, I don't read anything about it. It's just paperwork which I read about
here. This is the excuse that I read in the Dutch intelligence files that said that the excuse for going into Berlin after the war was to retrieve the crown jewels. And that was why the Russians gave permission for Prince Bernhard's team to launch Operation Juliana. The Russians thought it was just they wanted to dig up some rubble of a bombed out bank to try and find the princess's jewels. But the Russians didn't know was that they were trying to get the paperwork to steal all the German property back for the former Nazis.
Yeah, well, it doesn't really matter whether or not they actually went for paperwork or the crown jewels. The important part is that somebody went into East Germany and got those papers back.
Yeah. And that was the key to it. Now, Prince Bernhard, I'm told, but this is how the royal family really made their money. Prince Bernhard, with these corrupt connections to launder Nazi money, using the good name of the Dutch family, you know, he made a fortune for himself. But now, from what I understand, from what you found out, that maybe the Dutch royal family wasn't so innocent after all. Maybe they had a financial interest in the Nazi banks. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, it says in this article that before the war, the Thyssen Group got some stocks in the Nederlandse Handelsmaatschappij. It doesn't say how much. And the Nederlandse Handelsmaatschappij is a company that was actually used in the century before for the exploitation of the Dutch Indies. And after the war, this article just mentioned,
this is complex stuff. We've got to maybe go a little more depth. But it's getting ready to take a break for commercials. Hi, it's John Loftus with the Loftus Report. And welcome back. Our guest tonight is Aaron Lammertink. And he has been filling us in on some interesting developments. I've been tracing the origins of the families from America that invested in Nazi Germany before World War II. It was legal, just unethical, it was just legal. But it turns out the Dutch royal family, people we thought were our allies, they may have had their own investments in Nazi Germany. Good evening, Aaron. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Good. Now let's start at the beginning. The Dutch royal family is part of what we call the House of Orange, right?
Yes, exactly.
And did the House of Orange have a private bank that they had some investments in?
Well, they had a bank which was called the Nederlandse Handelsmaatschappij, which was...
say again, the Nederlander what?
Nederlandse Handelsmaatschappij, this is okay. Trades organization. It was founded in the beginning of 1800s by the king then, and that was also used for the exploitation of the Dutch Indies.
Oh, okay. So the West Indies was the famous colonies, and the Dutch companies exploited the West Indies, and that was the bank that they used. And the bank had ties with the king, just as the Bank of England had ties with the British royal family.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, what did this Dutch Royal Bank have to do with Nazis?
Well, according to the article I mentioned, before the war, the Thyssen concern took an interest, some shares, into that bank that was largely owned by the Royal Dutch family.
Wow. Now, we don't know how many shares. It could be 1%, it could be 99%, or somewhere in between, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But there's no doubt that the Dutch royal family was invested in what was a front for the Nazi money laundering machine.
No, that was after the war.
Well, it looks like that the links between the three banks, the August Thyssen Bank in Berlin, the Bank for Handelmaten Schietwacht in the Netherlands, and the Union Banking Corporation in New York. Those were set up in like 1918 to 1922, long before the war.
And that's right.
How far back was the Dutch royal family involved in this stuff?
According to the article in the NRC, it was just before the war that the August Thyssen Bank took a share in the Dutch handelsmaatschappij, so the bank of the Dutch royal family.
So it was the August Thyssen Bank that invested in the Dutch royal family's bank.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, now I get it. So they
that was before the war.
So they were buying the good reputation. They were buying the good name, if you will, of the Dutch family. And that was consistent, I think, with Dulles' plan to make sure that no matter who won World War II, that the banking network would survive. And so by getting in tight with the Dutch royal family, they could claim that they were really neutrals all along, when in fact they were Nazis. August Thyssen, of course, was a famous Nazi. He was imprisoned as a Nazi war criminal for several years after the war. But his brother, people don't know this, his brother lived in the Netherlands and had Dutch citizenship. And his brother and his side of the family pretended to be neutral. So that was part of the game. No matter which side won the war, one of the brothers would pop their heads up and say, oh, give the company back to me. It's really mine. The Nazis stole it from me, my bad brother. So apparently the swindle worked. But what's interesting is my intelligence sources say that Prince Bernhard, who married into the Dutch royal family when he married Princess Juliana, was in this up to his eyeballs. Now, Prince Bernhard, if memory serves, he's dead now, but he did not have a good reputation for moral fiber. Wasn't he involved with some international bribery scandal a few years ago?
Well, it could be, because the paperwork which shares into companies, some of the paperwork or the shares of the Dutch royal family were in the Dutch bank before the war, and they were moved during the war into the Thyssen Bank, the Rotterdam Thyssen Bank, the bank for handel and scheepvaart, and then they were moved to East Berlin. So after the war, the Royal Dutch family, of course, wanted famous to have their shares back. And then there was a secret operation to retrieve those from the East Berlin August Thyssen Bank. And a few years later, those shares had to be, I don't know exactly the words. Anyway, a few years later, it says in the article that the Royal Dutch, the bank of the Royal Dutch family, also owns shares in the Rotterdam Thyssen Bank.
Now, you're a citizen of the Netherlands. You realize that what this means is that a lot of people, survivors of the Holocaust now, are thinking about suing the Dutch royal family to get their money back. Basically, the Nazis stole money from the Jews of Europe and gave it in part to the Dutch royal family. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I don't know what percentage the shares were, but they just said that amongst the shareholders after the war, it was the Nederlandse Handelsmaatschappij, which was owned by the royal family for a large part.
Well, what a scandal. I mean, and I want to emphasize that, we can't blame the present members of the Dutch royal family for what their grandparents did any more than we could blame President John Kennedy, because his dad, Joe Kennedy, bought Nazi stocks. What people don't know is that Joe Kennedy and Prescott Bush went to Europe together in the same ship, and that it looks like Joe Kennedy bought his Nazi stocks from Prescott Bush. But you can't blame the current president for what his grandfather and great-grandfather did any more than you can blame President Kennedy for what his father did, or you can't blame the current members of the Dutch royal family because of what Prince Bernhard did. But looks like all the thieves of the previous generations did hook together. You know, what's your sense? Is there an obligation on the part of the royal family to give back the money that the Nazis stole, or at least give an apology? What do you think, Art?
I never thought about that. It doesn't seem unreasonable to give something back, but I don't know. I really never thought about that that kind of things.
Well, I'm a former prosecutor. I'm a big believer in justice, and that people who steal money should give it back, and plus interest. So whatever profits the Dutch royal family made, I mean, it has to be pretty clear. They were investing in a Nazi bank before the war. Is it possible that they didn't know that the Thyssens were heavily connected with the Nazis?
Well, they didn't invest in the Nazi bank before the war, or at least that's not clear.
But by this point, though, Thyssen has published a book called I Funded Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, the Dutch family, royal family, had to realize that when Thyssen wrote this book, I Funded Hitler, that they had been invested in a Nazi bank.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, that was a publicly available book. It doesn't appear, from the historical records that I've seen, that the Dutch royal family ever stood up and said, oh, excuse me, we're secret partners in this, and we're very sorry, we didn't know. Sever all ties.
No, I'm not aware of that either.
Going?
I'm not aware of anything like that either.
No, I think there was a brief period after the war into the Dutch Thyssen connections. The Dutch manager had a severe attack of conscience, and he went to New York City after the war to tell Prescott Bush, his New York partner, that he had just discovered that both banks were secretly owned by the Nazis. That there were fronts for the Nazi money laundering machine after the war. And we don't know what happened during that conversation. All that we know is that the Dutch bank manager turned up dead of a heart attack.
Yeah, well, it's a remarkable coincidence.
Yeah, isn't it? There's a Dutch journalist, Freddy Roper, that investigated the story, too, and he found out that the Thyssen family was owned the mansion next door to Margaret Thatcher, and he was looking to see if maybe that there had been some Nazi money that had bribed some of the British people. And his body was found shortly afterwards of a heart attack as well. Just another coincidence, though, right?
Yeah. what the article here mentioned is that the guys you're talking about, Mr. Kouwenhoven, They tried to get a conversation with the Prime Minister, and they wanted to talk about what was happening, so the way that those shares were got back from East Berlin, because they thought it would possibly be very, very dangerous, because it could get the Dutch into trouble with the Russians. And then I think the Minister of Finance, Mr. Liefting, he first ordered an investigation, but then, let's see, it says here,
you know, I have to ask you, Aaron, that, how, you've been translating some of these articles into English, and
mm-hmm.
I'm really grateful for that. You know, people think I'm very smart, I just have very nice people around the world that do the kind of research you're doing. How can other historians get access? Do you have a website?
Yeah, www.tuks.nl. And,
so, say that again slowly.
www.tuks.nl. And, the documents are in the subdirectory, docs. So that's www.tuks.nl/docs, D-O-C-S. There I have some background information, lots of it in Dutch, but also quite a lot in English.
Okay, so it's www.tuks.nl for the Netherlands, and /docs.
Yes, and I will make a translation of the whole article and put it up there.
You know, I think that would be really important, because if the Netherlands is the secret key to how the Nazi money got smuggled out. It's an important part of history. It's also important to Americans because the Dulles brothers, of course, were the guys behind the formation of our CIA. Back in 1947, the Dulles brothers got the law rushed through Congress to create the CIA, and Alan Dulles was out hiring people for his new CIA even before it was formally established. Dulles was the New York campaign manager for the Dewey campaign. And everyone knew that President Dewey was going to defeat President Truman, and Dulles was going to become the new head of CIA. So Dulles was already hiring staff. And then a terrible upset happened. Dewey lost to Truman, and Dulles didn't know what to do. It was critical to his clients to prevent an investigation of where all the Nazi money went and who it invested. So that's why he wanted to form the CIA. But for four critical years, we had two CIAs. The one that worked for the Democrats under President Truman and the one that worked for the Republicans under President Dewey. Now, this second CIA was hidden inside the State Department. It was officially called, the CIA was called OPC, Office of Policy Coordination. And it was a spy agency, sort of a Mission Impossible type guy. And so OPC was using CIA money, but spending it on secret projects. And we think one of the secret projects that OPC ran was helping the Nazis launder their money out of Europe back to the American investors, as well as protecting the reputation of the Dutch royal family. And I've often suspected that when von Koenhoven came to New York to tell Prescott Bush, hey, Union Banking Corporation is a Nazi front, that the next call that Bush made was to OPC. And then all of a sudden, von Koenhoven ends up dead. And that, quite frankly, is one of the things that OPC did in those days. They killed people. So we had two CIAs. Now, the Justice Department was complicit in helping OPC hide their Nazi connection, their financial connections, from the Democratic CIA that worked for President Truman. So we had a sort of a schizophrenic intelligence service in this country. And that was the root of a problem that's plagued us for a half a century, that we've had competing factions in the intelligence community, and each one hides stuff from the others. And it all goes back, I think, to these pre-war deals with the Netherlands to launder Nazi money. That if America ever had an efficient intelligence service, they would have found out 50 years ago what you're telling us tonight, that the royal family had financial arrangements with a Nazi front bank. And, you know, and this would have been investigated and prosecuted a long, long time ago. But because it wasn't, to this day, we still, one side of American intelligence can't talk to the other side. They spend as much time spying on each other as they do on the enemy. I think it's one of the reasons why 9/11 occurred. Because we had this incestuous relationship involving the Dutch banks, the Nazi banks in Germany, and the banks in New York, that it caused a crack right down the middle of American intelligence. Instead of having an integrated intelligence service, we had a divided one. Instead of sharing information, we had people that were keeping information secret. It's never been solved. I'm told there's a 75-year time ban on the British intelligence files, and that sometime around the year 2015, the British Secret Service's files on the House of Orange and on the New York investors, the Nazi investors, that will all be released. And so maybe a few years from now, we will all be beginning to see how the pieces of history fit together. But it's beginning to look to me as if there's a lot of history we don't know about that's been buried in the secret file. Is that the sense that you have in the Netherlands?
Yeah, I think so.
And what other secrets do you think are waiting to be exposed?
Sorry?
What other secrets do you think are going to pop out? I've written a little bit about the Vatican connection. You said that was something that was of interest to you.
Yeah, well, of course I don't know what's going to pop out. But there are some books which claim that the Vatican had something to do with it. for example, about the Federal Reserve, so the money system we basically have in the, on the globe. Some people claim that Abraham Lincoln, for example, was murdered because he wanted to change that system, and also John Kennedy was murdered because he wanted to end the Federal Reserve system, which
we owned by. Yeah, you know, I've heard a lot of stories, but I've had pretty good access to intelligence. I think, you know, a lot of people think it's a giant conspiracy, but I think what you have is that sharks are swimming in parallel lines. That the sharks don't conspire with each other, but they're all after the fastest, bloodiest meal they can get. They want to get rich quick.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think there was any great conspiracy to create the Federal Reserve System. I just think that there were greedy people out there, like the robber barons, who wanted to exploit it. And quite frankly, some of the robber barons were from the Vatican. How can I put it delicately? It happened.
Yeah, it could be. Well, what's interesting about the Federal Reserve System, or basically the whole money system, is that it's not a government who makes the money anymore, basically. If you look at our economy, we have something like 600 billion guilders of state debt, which means that costs us something like 10 billion euros each year of interest. So it's not the state who creates the money, but that are private banks, and so we as the people have to pay interest to those private banks. While we could have made created the money ourselves, because it's nothing more than a number on a computer somewhere. So the banks really don't do anything. If I go to a bank for a loan, they just update some number somewhere on some computer and say, well, yeah, here you have the money, and then they get interest. They don't have to do anything for it.
That's a good way to look at it. It's I've been a little bit suspicious of bankers for a long time, and you never know how these things work out. But, Aaron, I want to thank you for getting up so early in the morning and chatting with me. I'm afraid we've only got a minute left. Is there anything you want to say in conclusion?
Well, I just want to thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak to American people. I don't think I remember ever talking on American radio, so thank you very much.
Well, thank you for doing the research, and I hope that we all will use your website in the future to keep track of the story. It's www.tuks.nl/docs.
Yeah, and I will put up a translation of the whole article when I have finished it.
And ladies and gentlemen, we're coming up to the end of the show. I just want to remind you that the Intelligence Summit is desperately looking for a grants writer. Federal experience, we'd like to have you on board. Please drop me a line. Probably the easiest way is at john-loftus.com. I have a personal website there. You can always send me an email through that site. I'm usually pretty good about answering them. It's john-loftus.com. And in the next week or two, we may have our old johnloftusreport.com website back up too. So, you know that you're a little overworked when you have multiple websites with your name on. Speaking of websites, please check out intelligencesummit.org. We're getting ready to have our new conference October 22nd and 23rd in Washington, D.C. at the Marriott near the White House. And we have at least one presidential candidate confirmed so far. Lifelong Democrat and Obama, of course. I'm hoping that presidential candidate Barack Obama will join us as well. Shaul Mofaz has committed to come from Israel. So we're going to have an interesting group. The theme of the conference is discussing what's really going on with Iran. With their nuclear wealth, weapons development, is it just all public relations? So if you want to sit down and have a couple of days, it's a Wednesday and Thursday, and rub shoulders with the spy leaders from around the world, this is the place to do it. It's the annual meeting of the Intelligence Summit, and you are invited. It costs, I think it's roughly $399, plus you have to take care of your own hotel. So we'll give you a break on the Washington prices that can be pretty steep. But I think no one who has ever come to Intelligence Summit has regretted it. It's one of the most unusual experiences of a lifetime. And I hope to see you there. I'm the president of the Intelligence Summit. This is John Loftus with the Loftus Report saying thank you for joining us. We'll talk to you again on Monday. Have a good evening and good night.